Oh, what a privilege to be able to read great stuff written by someone else on a papyrus roll 2,000 years ago.
Welcome to the Latin Tutor Podcast. If your child is struggling in Latin, then look no further. My name is Emma Williams, and I'm here with practical tips and strategies to help you to help your child. Or maybe you're a teacher, wondering about the best approaches to the trickiest concepts in this unforgiving subject. With my 21 years as a teacher of Latin, as well as a private tutor, I've got a lot of experience to share with you. So if you're ready, incipiamus, let's begin.
I was hailed as the technical guru because I delivered my very first prep school conference using acetate sheets on an overhead projector.
Bob Bass will be familiar to anyone who has worked in the prep school setting. Most people know him as the author of numerous volumes, which have formed the backbone of the syllabus for Common Entrance and the Common Academic Scholarship. Bob is still writing and has recently developed a preference for independent publishing, granting him full control over his work. Bob began his teaching career back in the mid-70s and yet remains as vibrant and as passionate about our subject as any ECT. Furthermore, he turns out to be an early adopter of technology and even advised me to use a different piece of software to edit this podcast.
Well, I'd love to ask you about your philosophy of Latin, if that's okay.
Yeah.
The sort of approaches that you think are best.
Just about all of my teaching has been to years 6, 7 and 8. In other words, prep school age. And I suppose my approach reflects my own childish sense of humour and corny jokes and gimmicky stuff, which I couldn't get away with at senior level, I'm sure. I'd be hooted out or jeered out of the classroom. And fun lessons doesn't have to compromise on academic rigour. You can have fun lessons as well as know your stuff as well. And I'm always heartened when former pupils come back as parents and say, oh, I'm so glad. Oh, I'm so sorry I didn't continue it at my next school. Or new parents who are maybe new buyers into the private sector say, oh, Mr. Bass, I didn't realize how valuable that thing could be. If only we'd done it. Little Johnny has told us this, this and this. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
So, yes, I suppose you could say in a word, my approach is childish. But it suits some adults, but not. I'm not convinced I'd go down too well at a really serious senior school.
I don't know. Teenagers quite like corny jokes, so that because they sort of can laugh with you and at you at the same time.
A classical inspector once described my lessons as a cross between a football match, a game show, and a religious ceremony. I'm not sure whether that was a compliment or not, but I took it as a compliment anyway.
Yeah.
I taught in prep schools for, 46 years. And my own view is that year six is the ideal time to start Latin. I know some start a lot lower than that, and good for them. But year six, they're at a decent-ish level in English. They're keen to learn. They don't get embarrassed if we sing silly rhymes and mnemonics and I feed them lines and there's a set response. This is where the religious service comes in. They just have no inhibitions and they're keen and they like chanting tables. They like chanting stuff out loud and they understand it and they can cope with it. I enjoyed your chat with Caroline the other week. But I looked on with interest at the debate around when you introduce the cases and what order you introduce the cases in. Mm. And my approach has been nominative and accusative, which is fairly, yeah, probably standard. But then I throw them all together and they cope with it. They cope with it. What's the Latin of the farmer? What's the Latin for the girls? How would you say in one word in Latin, away from the island or something like that. I've come to thinking that some teachers generally have a quite a condescending attitude. I mean, yeah, a well-meaning, but condescending attitude towards the capabilities of the children. Oh, they can't possibly understand something like this. Let's make it easy for them. Let's dilute it. Let's call it this or that. And of course, there are those for whom that applies. But I found they respond really well, especially if you come clean and say, right, this is tricky. This is hard. This is going to test you. They enjoy getting difficult stuff right. Mm. If you come clean and say, right, this is hard. Don't expect you to get this. We may need a bit of practice. And when they do get it, they love it. Hey, that's hard, sir, but I got it right. Which is why in some years, I can end up teaching A-level grammar to year eight.
Yes, absolutely.
And the sad thing is that isn't always continued at the next school. It's not implemented as much as it ought to be at senior level, but at sort of a prep school level, how you can get a conglomeration of people at all these different levels of Latin and deal with it is a real problem. This is one of the common themes, Emma, at prep school conferences. How do I deal with people who've come into my class from another school, or they've come down a set because it's your timetable is based on how good you are at French or Japanese or whatever it is. How do I cope with all these kids at different levels of Latin? And at one stage, I had a year eight group, a nightmare for preparation. There's five or six different groups within the group working at their own level. The downside of that was that everyone was working at a slower pace.
Yes.
Progress was slower because of my having to give my attention to the four or five or six groups of individuals.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you crack that nut.
It's not ideal, is it?
I mean, the key thing is not to switch them off the subject.
Yes, and I fear that is what happens. I mean, certainly one of the first tutees that I had at prep school level, he did the scholarship. And then when he got to his senior school, he decided not to bother with the GCSE because he realised he'd covered all the material anyway. And quite rightly, he sort of said, well, what's the point? I don't really understand what the point is when I won't be doing any new material.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much so.
So I don't really know what the solution is, but it does seem that it seems to be a symptom of the private sector, in that each school can set its own syllabus. You can pretty much do whatever you like. And therefore, there's no coordination. There's no tying up of the curriculum from prep into senior.
If the prep school and the senior school go along the common entrance route, then that's all fairly well prescribed. And if a child does, say, common entrance at 13 and does well at it, especially at sort of level, there are three levels, at level three, for example, or even a common academic scholarship, it's called. There's not a huge amount of stuff left to do linguistically for GCSE.
No, absolutely not. It's pretty much all covered.
Yeah, but then I see it that puts an onus on the teachers at the secondary school to inspire them, read some literature, fine-tune their grammar or consolidate their grammar or go way up, go beyond GCSE if they can.
Well, I think the schools that do it well, that is what happens. So, for example, somewhere like Eton at GCSE, I know they do all of the set texts. So they don't just select, they cover it all because they've got time, because the students are so much more advanced. And other schools I know take the opportunity to do Greek. So it can be done.
So
it does seem to be a bit of a weakness in the system.
You're listening to the Latin Tutor Podcast. Stay tuned to hear more from the lovely Bob Bass, who can be reached via his website, rcbass.co.uk. On there, you'll find an amazing number of resources freely available. If you'd like to get in touch with me, my website is latintutoring.co.uk. But for now, back to the interview. And at this point, I leave Bob somewhat open-mouthed with the outrageous question I was asked hundreds, maybe thousands of times during my career. Why study Latin in the first place?
Oh, gosh, where do I end? Where do I start? A colleague's daughter, a long time ago, who I've had no responsibility Latin-wise for, when it came to her options for selecting GCSEs, she opted for Latin. She was asked, why do you want to continue with Latin? And she said, it makes you good at everything else. Which I thought for a 14, 15 year old to say that was quite something. And of course, you know, that sounds slightly arrogant. If you know Latin, you're good at everything else. But I could see where she was coming from, because she's now a modern linguist, especially in French and Spanish. So you can see the link there. One of my jobs at prep school, I wrote the style guide for writing reports, English reports in English, reports in English. And
not Latin.
That's right. That would be fun. There was a whole staff meeting once, and the then head of science said, well, how do you spell practice in that sentence? So I said, well, it's C if it's a noun and it's S if it's a verb. And the head of science said, yeah, I know that, but I don't know when it's a verb or a noun in a sentence.
Mm.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of ignorance out there, I think, Emma, on the basics of the language of language. And Latin and Greek, of course, solve that.
Well, a lot of people say, why study a dead language? Why not just study modern languages and see the links between them? And I always say, well, it's because it's a dead language that it's so valuable. It allows you to study the underlying roots of language without having to worry about all the things that modern linguists have to, the communication, yeah, accent, all of these things that are considered, well, are important in modern languages. You get to study the underlying structure of language with Latin. Yes.
It sucks you in if you're interested in words or how words become other words. So it expands into linguistics generally, as you're sort of saying. How does this word become that word in another language? And if you see the underlying patterns, things begin to make sense and you make connections.
But it's a question, of course, I always had fired at me, because when you work in an option subject in a secondary school, every other parent is saying, well, why should they choose your subject? Yeah. And depending on what mood I was in, sometimes I just wouldn't bother. Sometimes I'd say, do they like it? Then they should consider it. Yeah, I'm not here
I can sort of see the mindset where it's coming from, because why teach a dead language, which is probably one of the hardest subjects on the curriculum to study in detail, I think. The more demanding mentally, you can sail through some other subjects and get a top grade without very much effort.
Yeah.
So why put yourself through all this hard grind? I mean, I fell for Latin. I was sucked in. I was a late starter. I started Latin in the World Cup month, July 66. And I had a year or two of the grind, and it was entirely done from English into Latin. So there was no way out. You had to know your tables and your endings, and you had to be spot on. And I've always said that you can get away sometimes with coming out of Latin and more or less understanding it and getting a general sense. But if you go into Latin, you've got to get it dead right.
Absolutely.
And there's no room for error. And so I had that baptism of fire that which put so many off. Then, as we started on a GCSE, O level in those days, an O level text, I thought, hey, hang on, there's a whole literature in this language. That I didn't realize that. It's not just a fossilized language. People wrote in this 2000 years ago. Oh, what a privilege to be able to read great stuff written by someone else on a papyrus roll 2000 years ago. I had to do it from A level after that. And then I had to go into university because I didn't want to stop learning it. And I've got to get a job where I'm still doing this. I've got to teach. I've got to teach. And there I've been ever since. But the reason I went, it was accidental. I went into prep school education, really, because in my teacher training year in Southampton, in the days when it had not only a classics department, but a classics PGCE program, I went to a middle school where you've got sort of prep school age kids with all the enthusiasm. And I found that this was a great mix because you had the enthusiasm at that age group. But in a prep school, you've got the intellectual stimulus as well. So that was a great combination. And I've occasionally applied for jobs outside the prep school sector, but got nowhere, which is probably just as well.
Your publication record is incredible. When have you found the time as a full-time teacher to write so many textbooks?
Well, I suppose I'm like most classics authors, starts off life as a worksheet, and the worksheets gradually become bigger. Then you get some structure in it, and you think about what order should I be doing this in? And it's a bit I liken it actually to the proliferation of cookery books. All the food is there to start with. All the ingredients are there. It's just a case of repackaging it in a different way and maybe in a different sequence, and making it digestible to the customers at the other end. So although I suppose I've written about 25, 30 publications, they're sort of much of a muchness. I know that some teachers say, oh, I like the way this person deals with that. I like the way Ed Clark deals with that. I like the way Taylor deals with that aspect. I like the way the Bass deals with that aspect. I'll combine it all. And that's what they feed their kids, which is fantastic. And which is what I did. I like this approach to that, that approach to that. And this is the reason really why I've, you know, in more recent years, I've gone to independent publishing. So I can set it out the way I want it set out, using the paradigms I want to use as the paradigms and the sequence I want, whereabouts on the page I want the page numbers, silly little things like that, which a more mainstream publisher, of course, who has overheads to deal with, needs to have a uniform layout across all the publications and that sort of thing. And that sort of kept me going, exploring different and getting feedback from colleagues. I brought out something once, harking back to my own school days. It's called Latin as an Honor and Greek as a Treat, the two books of courses. And that Latin as an Honor goes entirely, starts from the word go into Latin. The core aim is still to impart fluency in reading Latin passages. But all the grammar stuff, with few exceptions, are going into Latin. And so by the time they do the sorts of exams which they have to do, it's a doddle coming out of Latin because it's easier. That's the theory anyway. And I've had some good feedback about, this is great. Is this still in print and blah, 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 which is fine. But I mean, I think that goes to show, Emma, that there's such another great attraction to it. There's such a wide variety of approach you can use to get to your end result, whatever works for you.
I think that's true.
Some people like Mary Berry, some people like Delia Smith, despite being a Norwich supporter. So there's no accounting for taste.
There's so much that I like about so many of the prep school publications. I would like all of you, the authors I admire, such as yourself, Ed Clark, you mentioned, episode 2, I'd like them to write the same, but aimed at GCSE, because the vocabulary is slightly different. There's a lot of common entrance vocabulary that doesn't appear at GCSE and vice versa. So it's very frustrating, because I did borrow a lot of the prep school stuff for my secondary school students, but then had to edit and adapt. That's the problem. It's the vocabulary, really.
Yeah.
And in the common entrance sector, huge amount of battle vocabulary, which doesn't appear at GCSE.
Yes.
Yes. Very useful when teaching the ablative, though.
yes, absolutely. But going back a long way, when they were originally compiled, those common entrance vocab lists, they were originally based on words which occurred in course books which were current at that time.
Interesting.
So I see what you mean about, you know, a possible scope for a different approach now. Mm. And once that was established, of course, that sort of stuck. with tweaks every 5 or 10 years.
So it's probably thinking of aiming towards using wilding, I suppose.
Yes,
I recall as being very battle heavy.
But we've done away with roses, and I see that Ed Clark, the workaholic Ed Clark, has brought back Mensa for table is back. And there's a film called The Young Winston, and a great scene when the young Winston is introduced at Harrow to the headmaster and learn this table by the time I get back, boys. Mensa, mensa, mensa. Sir, mensa, a table, oh, table. Sir, why would you talk to a table? Oh, it's the vocative case, boy. It was really funny. So, yes, I mean, I have a sort of it's nostalgia for for how bad things used to be, how nonsensical things used to be.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, much as I think the further I progressed in my career, the more traditional, in inverted commas, I became, in the sense of I realised how much of the grounding in grammar was necessary. However, having been taught originally, very traditionally myself, I mean, I was taught using Wilding. It was just, there was nobody even said who the Romans were. It was just, right, there you go. The barbarians ran over the hill. What? Who?
Dino Punch's companion to the classics.
I've seen little snippets.
It's a superb little booklet. And there's an assortment of quite funny stuff, a lot of it Mickey taking of the then current trends in Latin. And by way of illustration, one half page had a sort of circular black blob in the middle, and it said, "This image of a Roman coin was used to enliven the pages of a of Latin courses." And it was just a black blob in the middle of nowhere to enliven the light years away from modern courses. And I see that Subarani and De Romanis are following the sort of Cambridge Latin approach of lots of pictures. I'm not being flippant here. Lots of illustrations to make it visually interesting.
Yes.
But I haven't got enough experience to be able to pass judgment on whether it delivers the language or not.
Well, it was very interesting talking to Caroline, because she made it very clear that the Cambridge Latin course in particular relies on the expertise of the teacher. And I thought, oh, that makes a lot more sense, and that's certainly how I used it. Rather than standing there and criticising the book, so, well, there's no grammar in it, the idea is the teacher does that side of it. But of course, I guess the one bit of disquiet I was left with is, increasingly, Latin is taught by non-experts or people who perhaps don't have full fluency and expertise in Latin. And of course, that then makes you think, if they're relying on the Cambridge Latin course, that's going to be a problem.
That's right. If the generation comes through, don't have a sound grasp of grammar, they're not going to be able to pass it on to their pupils. Mm-hmm, and over the years at prep school classics conferences, a recurrent theme is, could we in the delegates, we among the delegates who are non-specialists, maybe we did a GCSE, maybe we did it as a subsidiary at university, could we have some backup and support from those who are specialists to help us deliver what we've got to deliver? Because I'm sad to say, once on the Common Entrance setting team was a setter who was teaching A-level, who was an A-level Latin examiner, actually. I had to ask this setter to leave the panel because the setter, I'm being gender neutral, because the setter couldn't string together a common entrance level piece of Latin to set as a passage.
What?
So, this emphasis on knowing your stuff, knowing the nitty gritty, is absolutely vital. What you say about the grammar. Absolutely right. You can't go away with half knowing it.
No, certainly not if you're going to become an A-level examiner.
Yeah. gone are the Victorian days when the mark of a gentleman was how fine he was a composer of Greek and Latin prose.
tempora, oh mores.
Yes, absolutely. I was one of the two or three at university who volunteered to do prose composition. We did sort of once a fortnight. And we would pick each other's, you know, the lecturer especially would pick up our, oh, there's another way of saying this, or how about varying the style with that? It was absolutely fascinating. And it stood me in good stead ever since, I think, having had that training. Of course, the modern criticism would be, well, what a waste of time. What's the point of that? even more pointless than doing Latin.
Yeah.
But when you see, you know, people from Oxford and Cambridge composing Sapphic odes for the Olympic Games or whatever it is, you realise, wow, that is someone who knows their language and their literature.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole it's pointless argument, I've always found one of the most puzzling, because nobody ever says, well, what's the point of, why do students have to do maths at GCSE? And then when you push them, you assume they should, well, of course they need their maths. Why? Well, everybody needs to be able to do basic numeracy. Well, yes, but that's not what GCSE mathematics is about. That it's trigonometry and algebra. I've never used mine personally because I haven't become a chemist or an architect or a, you know, but nobody ever questions the point that students must of course do maths at GCSE.
I heard someone say once that 80% of what you do at school is useless.
Of course, in all subjects, you know, all subjects taken to a certain level are quote-unquote pointless.
Yes, obviously I'm not a fan of this utilitarian, it must have a use, otherwise don't do it.
Yes, and I think that it really worries me when people talk about education as nothing more than a factory for what students, these mythical jobs that students will supposedly go on to do in the future that apparently are impossible to predict, whereas the reality is, well, education is more than that. It's about enriching and broadening.
Yes. I once spent a day, Emma. I was once upon a time, I was a director of studies, and I trying to broaden my horizons. I spent a day at a school called St. James's in London, and they were heavily into Sanskrit.
Oh, wow.
Into Sanskrit. It was fascinating. And of course, I drew parallels with Latin. I learned a bit of Sanskrit myself. I've forgotten most of it now. But I was introduced to the member of staff, went into the staff room and said, oh, this is Fred. He teaches English and Sanskrit. Oh, this is Barbara. She teaches chemistry and Sanskrit. Everyone taught something and Sanskrit.
Wow. They,
totally into it. I thought, if only this could be a Latin instead of Sanskrit. And because everyone did Sanskrit every day, sort of seven times a week. And I sat in a class of, it was five girls doing A-level Sanskrit prose composition.
Whoa.
And the work they were doing was superb. Writing in Sanskrit script. Devanagari script is called. It was beautiful. And I found the teacher saying the same sort of things they would do to an A-level Latin prose script. Oh, well, there's another way of saying when this had happened. You could do this, or you could do that. Oh, yes. And these girls would be writing out this beautiful works of art. And again, what's the point? What's the point? Because it's lovely and they love it.
Yeah.
And it's stimulating their brain.
Yeah.
And no, it's not a vocation. It's not going to get you a job as a plumber. but if you love it, what's going to happen if there's no one left to interpret ancient texts?
Well, this is it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, the number of Latinists that will say, oh, I don't see the point of prose composition.
But what happens when they go to France and have to speak French?
Yeah, indeed. Well, that's something that Ed says, you know, and he said in his interview that, you know, we wouldn't dream of not teaching, you know, how to speak in French or write in French.
It's speaking a modern foreign language, surely, is just mental prose composition spoken out loud.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's no good learning preset packages, as you know, many kids do, I suspect, for their oral exams. But it's knowing the grammar and how to fit the words together with the right end, even in modern languages, with the right endings or the right form to arrive at the sense you want. We'll revolutionise the world, Emma. We could spend all day whinging about this and that.
You've been listening to the Latin Tutor podcast. Do join me next week for the final episode of season 2. We've got one more author to come. Huge thanks to Bob Bass for being such an absolute joy to interview. And do go to his website to benefit from his incredible resources. So, I better get on and record this final interview then. Haven't actually met him yet.